Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Kerry Hines.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Kerry Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines, and I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Kerry.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have 8 arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to a culture change, reality-based organizational change. And then I do executive success coaching. I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations. And I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity. And then do open registration seminar events for communities. And then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s. And the original is in the British Museum. It was made in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland. Not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute, but when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that. I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So when I saw it, and I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything, you really do, and you outline it there, you put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this, You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education. And you have, you know, just some great things historical content, you know, reference. And then my other part of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection, so of artifacts and things that you know, that document the African American experience, or the African experience, I guess, if you were on some level. So, you know, we want you to walk us through just about everything. So, and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship, because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into, or through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved? Because I understand that you're from Canada, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, what
so
happened is I ended up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, and I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000-6,000 miles on my thumb, pretty much all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life. That really caused me to revisit, you know, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day, and
old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was,
if you don't mind.
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that
point. Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
so then, what are the chaplain, for those of us who don't know, obviously we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like, how does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys. Is not there to take, but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players, because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids, their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it, and so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, you know, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you in and kind of push you forward with, you know, getting to have a deeper understanding. So what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is of course, you can imagine, when I was 25 years of age when this happened, and my first year, my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, you mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me. And so it was earning their respect. But I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to, and the sincerity of my heart by asking questions. And it's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward. That was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world. So I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male, growing up, and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself, about history, and it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time. And I just would get these, what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those.
And so I'd bring home a video, let's say, a series called Africa, A Voyage of Discovery by Basil Davidson. It was a BBC series, a man from Great Britain. And then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, Part 1, Part 2. The Promised Land, about the move from the South to the, especially the Chicagoland area. And I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima. And I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it. I'd ask all kinds of questions, and he let me to ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009, and I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So
wow.
That kind of was the genesis to... And then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection. And Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection, the impact it had. It is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces, The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice, and plus they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library, I've done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff. Also, Secret Service, 4 years in a row, FBI, just fascinating stuff that
wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors, and I find that especially when I'm speaking about diversity or black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this? What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's motivating him? And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. That white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had, like, the shackles, if you will, for, like, that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you. In addition to so many other different things, what are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana at the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica, and I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. And he brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me. And I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shackles they have available. And for them to do that, I just feel so respected by these the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Stephen Danica. And so the other pieces, I've tried to do, Carrie, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand, to cross the no-man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I tried to bring more of an international view, and because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America. In fact, there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa. And many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it. But it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish, so that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went. St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also I have, what I've tried to do with the collection is I've not tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific and nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I've tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who are have been under the boot of slavery and the trade. And, you know,
and what have you found,
Jim Crow
for the most
laws.
Part? Right.
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube, Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. And it what it basically is the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging from lynching, the black code laws, and just the depression where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that are, it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature what people endured. But then we talk about the blades of grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer. Because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, I think I've got problems. You know, I mean, here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally. Stuff like, you know, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud, you know, if people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being. And at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. My ears are too big, my ears are too small, my hair is not enough. You know, all that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that, to me, is I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who, the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And then I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the internet? I guess I should ask.
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
right now,
if
I were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where could you find one? You know, someone might say, "Well, I've got everything." No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
No, that's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or you name the names out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share putting it out there, and it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Annie Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure. But it's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book, especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, "You're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African-American men, you just put it in a book, right?" That's what they're telling us. And they said, you're wasting your time. You got to use more visual, music, whatever, other means and methodologies to reach your target audience. But we kept on going with it, and I'll tell you,
which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is, absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging message we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is, you can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book, and who are you, and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us from some interviews from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age, knowing what the remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, that question changed the tone, because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving, we've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology, and I think in that direction, began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence, that all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual suddenly has, it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression to just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy while I'm moving from one part to the next, and never to be revisited, but a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a let's say a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy. In Great Britain, just the sound of your speech. If you're from Yorkshire or Scotland and you're talking with someone who is from London, you know, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it, you know, personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now. And I was speaking at their Martin Luther King event. And I talked about the moment. And I talked about the grieving process. And there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me his story, he said, you know, he says, when I experienced the moment when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. He was no more than about 6-7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind to get a name. And he said that what happened is that I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says later on, he says, I rose pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there. And he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. And remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About 3-4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit. And he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye and as serious as a heart attack. He said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Carrie, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard what he said to me. And I thought, I got in the car. I mean, I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray, I began to talk to God. I said, I never want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize and repair as best as I can. Now, I think that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one, people reaching out and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
that. Cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood with our spouses, with our kids, our next-door neighbors, everybody,
mm-hmm.
and just, I think it could have a profound impact on our, on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days, you had the hibachi grill, and you put the briquettes in there, and there's only one or two that are hot, and then you kind of bring the other the other ones that are cold, you bring them up next to the hot ones, and you hope they catch fire. And
yeah.
So I just think if we can get just some people that are hot, cold,
mm-hmm.
briquette coals, and with this message, and little by little, you know, the whole purpose behind the collection. I hold things lightly. You know, that collection, the whole purpose of the collection is to help create an opening in the hearts for people to hear this message. And
wow.
my book, the books I write, you know, everything is all designed to help open up doors and hearts, minds to these kinds of things, to get out of small-mindedness, to kind of move. We can't deny the pain, but it's kind of like a ratchet wrench. You know, a lot of people view the click, 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 you know, the backwards movement.
Right, right.
Just as that, a backwards movement, backwards movement. But actually, when you think about the purpose of the ratchet wrench to loosen a bolt or tighten a bolt, when you do the click, 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 that's an important part of the whole purpose of the ratchet wrench. What's my point? The point is I think sometimes we just need to take a step back, take a look at our pain. Click, 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 and when it's uncomfortable, turn the music off, turn the external stimulation off, and just confront the pain. And we might have to do it in counseling. We might have to do it reading books. We might have to do it in prayer. In a lot of different ways we deal with the pain, but we all have to do that click, 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 and take the step back. But really, that step back is not a backward step. It's a forward step because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. It's not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come into that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, and then kind of talk about entrepreneurship in just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important, and it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, you know, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot, and you say a lot, and there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit. You know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Terry, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved
mm-hmm.
with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this. But I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values, and I detail that in the workbook called If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking the idea to the marketplace. It's a book about
yeah.
discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club so that people can learn how to deal with objections. and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, black history galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com, they can learn more about this model. Because I think the Black History Gallery can become like a town well for a community where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with, let's say, an organization wanting to mentor youth, you know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later, you know, where do you want to be down the road 5-10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5-10 years from now? And, you know, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5-10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now. And we can do that in a very positive way and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say, let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial a business together. And I developed a whole magazine project around that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We'll look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, you know, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for, and so that they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that and how did you know, we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, you know, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet, the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? Who,
right.
What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone, about Manager J. Walker, but then you might have three or four people saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Right.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
And because she
Go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was.
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks. I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to parocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters. Poro, P as in Paul, O as in Ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in Ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college.com. And they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. This building is just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first
Amazing.
People in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And
Who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Annie Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishments.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionaires of African descent, female millionaires in the country.
And that's what I'm getting.
Climbing.
But why? How on this earth? I try to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both and all the things that they
no
stand for.
They're both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone, and seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher.
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man. And he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head, and felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced. Let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became. She was a very. If you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable. You know, clean. It was orderly. It was. You could see the record system she had. My point being, is that this was an incredible person. But once after the wedding. Then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed, in 1926, 175 people with franchise outlets in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines, a wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone orphanage, that was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he
of course.
Grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's why the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, it comes from that Good Avenue.
All this time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So
yes. G-O-O-D-E. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work, and so he became a beautician. And of course, his songs just took off, and he never went back to it. But
right. Amazing. So, okay, well, that explains a great deal for us on that, because I was just curious. I'm really sad to understand that she had that kind of a ending. But you know what? I always like to remind folks, and it always seems to me that it's always those who are incredibly talented and creative, and they always attract a certain kind of the opposite, if you will. I don't know. It just seems very strange to me. But anyway,
Some people make personal choices and bad business choices, and other people make bad business choices.
It's the opposite, exactly.
Good personal choices.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is great. Folks, if you've just joined us, we have really been kind of getting a great education, a great understanding of so many historical elements and things that we kind of knew a little bit about, or we kind of heard about, and some of us have read some things but not others. So we're so excited to have the gentleman behind the Freeman Institute. He is the founder, CEO, and president, Dr. Joel Freeman, and he's with us today. And this is just, I'm still kind of stuck on the 3,000, more than 3,000 pieces that you have in the Black History Collection. I can't wait to come and see that. So I'm very, very excited.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited
about it. Sure. So this is just wonderful. And we're going to tell the folks again, why don't you do that, Dr. Freeman? Tell the folks how they can reach you, how they can find out the items that they really need to focus on some of these. I mean, you have quite a bit of information.
Well, I think if people can go to blackhistorycollection.com, and then at the very bottom of the page is all of my contact information. And so then I'd be very happy to talk with them if they want to order a book, a film version of the book, Return to Glory, the entrepreneurship book, anything at all, or just want to talk maybe about something in there that they have a collection or a few pieces and they're wondering about it. I'd be very happy to talk with people. And so that's probably the best way, blackhistorycollection.com.
We're going to, of course, stay on top of all of this and bring you back, Dr. Freeman. We're going to keep, we've got you now. And there's a whole lot of this that we're going to delve into on a regular basis, because this is something that's so critical and important for us to have a greater understanding about. And I feel so honored and lucky right now. I feel so lucky that I've been able to come across your information. I'm just very grateful. Now, I have to say, before we close out, I had mentioned this at the top of the interview. I love the quotes that you've assembled. I don't know who wrote them, but I just love them. One of them, and these are just a couple of them that I just said, oh, wow, how great. Patience is not waiting. It's how you act while you're waiting. So that's one. I love that. And I think that says so much. And my other favorite that I seem to just picked up again from looking at, started at freemaninstitute.com, and I saw this, and it's like, age doesn't always bring wisdom. Sometimes age comes alone. I just love that. That says it all. So I want to just say you are just extraordinary. You're extraordinary.
I'm an expert in this or that. I'm not an expert. I'm just a student. And so I'll always be a student learning.
Wow.
Like someone once said that you can't learn with your mouth open. It's just more of a situation. You just really want to. I'm always someone that I want to just learn. Because generally speaking, you aren't learning much when your lips are moving. And so I want to be a person who listens at least twice as much than I speak.
I
did a lot more speaking today than I.
Well, that's
than I
okay.
Like to do.
that's exactly what I was about to say. It's okay when your lips are speaking, when they're educating so many people, countless folks who need to hear what you have to say. So I am so grateful. Now, are you on social media? We need to find out. Are you on social media at all?
I'm on Facebook. I've got about 16 pages. In fact, there's a page called Black History Collection. It's the only one on Facebook. Got over 10,000 followers on that. And got some very, very cool stuff on that. And then, of course,
well, you're
my
about
name.
To have 10,001.
It says Black History Collection right on the Facebook page. And then,
sure.
Of course, I have my own personal Facebook page, and I'd love to connect with anybody. And then I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and who knows about me and all
okay.
that kind of stuff that's out there.
So we can find you. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have you back, as I said, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Well, do you have any closing thoughts? You've been so kind to just share your perspective on all of this, and just someone who has done so much. Do you have any closing thoughts or words of inspiration or encouragement?
Well, I do. I think, speaking of the hair and beauty industry, I just see how Asians have pretty much taken over, and I'm not mad at them. I think they just took advantage of a situation that was open and available. I've developed a 10-year plan on how African Americans can take back the hair care and beauty industry. Starting from the top down and the bottom up. And I think Annie Malone figures very much into this. I would love to see this booklet get into every beauty parlor, every beauty salon, every barbershop in the country, and have people learn about Annie Malone. And then I'd like to see the most senior people in the hair care beauty industry, from the old guard companies, the new guard companies, come together. In the first year, not even deal with business things, just develop relationship, to take a look at the elephants in the room, to walk through all of that, to deal with that, and then have a united, just not a united front necessarily, even though that's important, but united, just be united and to really become good friends and understand how important this is. And then in the second year, start developing manufacturing and then distribution. And little by little, I think that there's a whole willing audience built around Annie Malone's story that could be wide open, because people will not buy black just for the sake of buying black. They want to buy something that is a good price, that's easily available, it is distributed well, is manufactured well, and you just check all the boxes off, and then someone will say, okay, now I'll buy whatever that product is. If it happens to be black, that's what I'm talking about, is to create a whole industry that can, because without the if the consumers are trained and understand what's going on, I think, and then there's a product and manufacturing and distribution all set up in place to deliver it, I think that within 10 years, the whole industry can turn around and it can become something that's well within the African-American community. But I think Annie Malone is the key for all of this.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Root Rock Salon. Healthy roots, healthy hair. Our expert stylists will help you shine naturally beautiful. We offer everything from hydrating shampoo, conditioning hair mask, oil steam treatments to lock in the cuticle, and an array of natural styles and programs to promote healthy hair growth using professional products. Book your consultation today online at RootsRockSalon.com. Visit us at 72 Harrison Avenue, West Orange, New Jersey, or call us at 973-957-7800.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of The Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois, and that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our black community my life. The black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets. And if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible. But we can bring black hair care back. There are great black hair care companies that exist, black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful for, in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black...
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. I have a very special guest co-host joining me on the line right now. It is my great honor and pleasure to welcome back the one and only Mary Reed Johnson from Hair, Head, Heart. Good morning, Mary, and welcome back to the show.
Awesome. Good morning, Carrie. This is like super day. Every day is super day if you choose it to be.
Well, this is true. It's a super day just to wake on up, everybody. And that's a good way to say we're happy that you wake up with us here at the broadcast each morning. So now, listen, Mary, I want to kind of jump right on in. It's about recognizing the amazing legacy of the one and only Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What do you have for us this morning?
Well, you know, there's at least 10 things we're going to talk about today. Let's say
wow.
10 things
right.
that people should know about Martin Luther King Jr. How's
awesome.
That?
Awesome. Let's say that. 10 things that you should know about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Okay, awesome. I am ready for number 10. I thought I knew everything, so I should be pretty good at this. Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy.
And that's the thing. Most people do. Yeah, most people. I mean, he's been with us in spirit for
right.
many years.
There's
a lot of information. Everybody thinks they know everything, but I just want to make sure you know these things. Right?
Ooh, okay. So these are 10 things we should know about. Wow, okay.
Yes. So number one in my mind is that
let's start with number 10, right? Or are you saying the most important thing? But yeah, let's count it down. We're going to count it down for you guys out there.
All right. Martin Luther King is one of only two Americans, right, that has a holiday named after them. And the only other person, well, whose birthday.
Hold on, let me see if I can guess. You said Dr. King is one of only two individuals, I would imagine, who actually has whose birthday is a holiday. I'm going to have to say it is, I want to say, George Washington.
Ding 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 ding.
Was that
yes.
is that right?
So, yes,
wow.
George Washington and Martin Luther King. That's it.
That is a lot.
Whose birthdays are national holidays? Yes, and it wasn't easy. Well overdue. You've heard the birthday song, right?
Right.
Our birthday.
Happy birthday song. The old happy birthday song, happy birthday to you, happy birthday. Are you talking about the Stevie Wonder
song.
Version? That's the Stevie
yes.
version. Okay.
Yes. So they had tried many times to get, his birthday recognized, but it didn't work. So after his passing, actually, Stevie Wonder, he had written the birthday song already, right? He wrote the birthday song, and so Stevie Wonder and Coretta Scott King, which, can we say this is a fact within a fact? If you don't know who Coretta Scott King is, please tell them, Carrie, who Coretta Scott King is.
Then you need to hand back your card if you don't know who Coretta is. Coretta was the incredibly brilliant partner, certainly to Dr. Martin Luther King. She was his wife. And her legacy is that amazing as well. She was an amazing legend all by herself. This was a great partnership for the ages.
Yes. So great musician, Stevie Wonder, and excellent, most adoring and talented and skilled wife, Coretta Scott King, went around the country on a tour singing this song over and over, you know, happy birthday to you. And dare I not sing, but they went, did a tour. And while they were doing this tour of the music, they were also collecting signatures, right? So in the end of that 4 months, they delivered over 6 million signatures saying that they wanted this to this birth, his birthday, to be recognized as a national holiday. And obviously,
wow,
they succeeded.
That is amazing. I remember a lot of that, too, during my day. It was just incredible. Incredible. And now it's hard to think that there was a time, Mary, that it was not the holiday, that it didn't exist as a holiday. It's hard to think of that because we've grown accustomed to it so much at this point and so very valid.
His wife and Stevie Wonder got out there and they did the work. And
they did the work.
Delivered those. Yep, got the petition and submitted it, and that's why we
have
it.
That's how it began, yeah. That's right, and we remember those days. I remember that. I remember that very well. Well, I am so grateful, and I am so, so thankful to you, Mary, for sharing these little-known facts, I call them, little factoids about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the celebration. How wonderful is that? So that's number 10. Awesome. Okay, I've given them numbers. And number 9,
okay.
Mary, on your countdown on things we should know about Dr. Martin Luther King, what else have you got for us?
How about, let's see, we're on number 9. What was
his
name at birth?
Yes. Now, this one I know only because I just recently found out. But what I did notice is that other folks knew this, and I did not know this until a few days ago, literally. So I'm going to say his name, I believe his first name was Michael. But what I don't know is, okay, well, what exactly is the story, or when did he become Martin instead of Michael? I still don't know the story behind it. Do you happen to know that, Mary?
I have the popular story, which is not quite matching what I saw in the book, The Three Mothers, which was about the mothers of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and we were talking about this artisan the other day. Our writers, one of our great, great writers and artisans. I'm walking literally in my house and pulling out my book, James Baldwin, right? But that's a wonderful read if anybody gets to it. Yes.
Yes.
But
James Baldwin.
I'm
going to
give you the popular story.
Okay.
I'm just going to give you the popular story. The popular story is that he was born and given the name Michael. He's from a line, he was a third generation minister and that type of thing. But his father, the minister Michael, went to overseas, and he was talking with and impressed by the Lutheran community, and their leader was, and he, long deceased, but their leader was Martin Luther. So he was studying all of this, and he was really impressed. So he came back, changed his name as well as his son's name to Martin. So Martin Luther King Jr.
That's how it worked. Okay.
Yeah, and Martin
it out.
At that point was only 5 years old. And even through life, this is part of what's in the Three Mothers, through life they called him Michael, like his close friends and family. They called him Michael still.
Wow.
But his name was officially changed by his father.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely amazing. I've always wondered that.
Yep. Well, number 8, if you're ready. This is for everybody who just doesn't believe that, they're any good, if they've ever been in the pokey or if they've ever experienced trouble with the law and that type of thing. Martin Luther
folks
King
in need of
has
a second
been
chance,
in jail.
It sounds like.
Oh, well, even more than second chances. He was arrested. One time he got arrested in Alabama for driving 30 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone. Right?
Huh.
We get tickets. We shouldn't get arrested. So those types of things even happened to Martin Luther King, but he didn't let it stop him. He pressed on.
He pressed on. Well, you just mentioned about that. They stopped. There was the big case where the lady stopped a young black man, the Caucasian policewoman, stopped the young black man because of his tail light and his rear view mirror, I believe.
Minneapolis.
Ended up killing him. She thought she had picked up her taser, according to her story.
Well, if she had the wherewithal to say taser, 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 very obvious in the video, she said it three times. She had the wherewithal to know it was not a taser.
There are a whole lot of circumstances and situations with it, and I think justice was served. So I'm very happy about that, and I believe, you know, it doesn't bring the young man back, and God, how awful it is, just awful. So, but that reminds me of that, Mary. So, Dr. King, you're right, and he pressed on, and so must we. So, listen, let me just remind everybody, folks, if you're just joining us here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, it is my great honor to have you with us. We are paying tribute to the amazing legacy of the one and only Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. And it is, as always, it's a pleasure to have my guest co-host join us on this episode, really. It is the one and only. She's from Hair, Head, Heart. You guys know Mary Reed Johnson. Mary, again, thank you so much for being with us on the broadcast. We're happy.
Absolutely. And I'm not doing it fully in order, but I'm doing it kind of in... like from young years up to what we know as the icon.
Well, listen, it sounds awesome to me. So I think you are at about number 7, if I'm not mistaken. I think number 7.
Yes, yes. What do you think Martin Luther King was doing when he was about 13 years old?
Ooh, okay. Let's see, 13. I'm going to say he was leading a congregation. I could
be
wrong.
Not quite yet. He was raised in the church, and he was, you know, being...
Oh, okay, that was an easy one for him. Do I get one more guess?
Yes.
Okay, I'll say he was singing in the choir.
People, what do regular people do when they're, like, 13?
Oh, that's a tough one. At 13, you don't even think of anything. You're not thinking of anything, are you? I don't remember thinking of anything at 13.
Well, not that much, but again, he was being groomed for some stuff. But people need to work. And Martin Luther King...
Oh, he had a job?
Actually, he had a job. He was a paper boy.
Wow. Oh, yep. You know, and it's awful to not know that because I also was a paper boy. Now, see, had you framed that Mary Reed Johnson as what was your first job or his, I would have realized. But no, I did not think of it that way. But I'll tell you, that was my first job. And I was actually probably a little younger than that. But I remember I was a paper boy also. So that is inspiring. I didn't even know we had that in common.
Yes, it's like he was a regular guy who turned into an icon with some massages, you know? So, he delivered the Atlantic Journal at age 13. So.
Oh, that's out of Atlanta. I've been in that, mentioned in the Atlanta Journal. We call it AJC now, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, out of Atlanta area. Is that the same newspaper?
I'm thinking so, but I would have
to
do some homework.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay, well, it sounds pretty good to me. Good job, Mary.
Yes, his parents did a great job.
Awesome.
So he's doing that at 13. Guess what he did by the time he was 15?
I'm wondering what on earth, what was left? Fly to the moon. I mean, he was so incredible. I'm going to guess that at 15, I'll say he started a church.
Not quite.
I'm going to keep saying it until I get that right.
He's still being baked in the oven. You want one more? Okay. You pick it.
I'll say that he got married.
Oh, nope, he's a little young for that. But he was kind of getting in that realm. He actually started Morehouse when he was 15.
Get out of here.
Yep.
Dr. King was a genius.
Yep. He, you know, it's so interesting because he, I think, skipped, I want to say, 12th and 7th grade, something like that. But he was in college by the time he was 15.
Wow. That is amazing. Now, that
here,
is incredible.
He skipped 9th grade and 12th grade. That's what it was. Yes.
Wow. No, he was so smart. You could just tell.
Well,
he was just an incredibly smart person.
Yeah, so look at our young people, and while we, you know, don't believe what the world says about them, you know,
right.
They can start young and do great things or be at least moving towards greatness. They can develop the skills, but we have to guide them. You know, I'm sure he didn't wake up when he was 12 and say, I think I'll go to Morehouse tomorrow. That took some massaging from his background and his parents.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we have to take that responsibility and guide our young people and not just berate them or talk about, you know, the negatives that media would have us believe about them.
Absolutely. So
the
leadership sounds very, very important with all of this.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Okay, now,
well, Mary, you are killing it. Okay, folks.
I'm
loving this.
I wouldn't love them some Martin. So
yes.
We are on number 6, 5?
I think, yeah,
where
I think we're up
Carrie?
To 5 now. I'm counting
all right,
5.
All right.
Wow.
All right. So, okay, he went to school, and did he just get one degree? We know he's a theologian, so we know he got some
right.
kind of master something somewhere, right? He didn't
True.
Just go to one school, by the way. Yeah. So for those of you who are in college, those of you who are in college and not making it work in one place, he went to several schools. But at the end of the primary education, he had a sociology degree.
Hmm.
He had a theology degree.
Wow.
Right? And that's through the Baptist minister's theology training, you know, that type of stuff. And one other, but he, you know, had those two as his primary base, the sociology and theology degrees.
Wow.
So,
Dr. Martin Luther King was nothing to sneeze at. Not at
I think the
all.
Other one was Boston University. He got his PhD. So
unreal. Mary, what
yep.
good
so,
information. Good information.
Well,
thank you so much.
These are things people should know. People
we should know about Dr.
Martin.
King. Yeah.
And
some
I'm
I do, but
in,
this I'm learning today.
Well, I'm going to throw in something that other people, everybody should be very, very aware of, and this is number 4.
Awesome.
That, okay, yes, he has he's one of only 2 people with the national holiday. But a lot
yes.
of people get confused with his national holiday birthday recognition and Black History Month. Birthday
oh.
is January.
Right.
Black History Month is February. So
yes.
be very
Go right
clear
ahead, Mary.
On those things. Well, I mean, I just want people to be clear and not get complacent and forget these very, very, very important things.
I think I have
so
a
Black
theory
History
on
Month?
This. Yes.
What is, tell me.
I think I have a theory on this, Mary. I thought about this. You know, why folks might tend to confuse Dr. King's birthday celebration. First of all, there's his actual birthday. Then there is his celebration birthday. And then Black History Month. So those are 3 things.
Right.
And
right.
So his birthday, his actual birthday that we celebrate every year is January 15th. And his holiday is celebrated the third Monday in January. And then
Correct.
Right after that, on the heels of that, comes February, which is just a coincidence. And that's Black History Month is celebrated, of course, in February. So then you have a lot of large, and I've noticed this in the past, a lot of large organizations or outfits who, you know, they will grab and they will, you know, mention about Dr. King again as part of their Black History celebration because he was so, you know, so incredibly important to the very fabric of that. So that's why, so for, it's great because it's kind of like we've extended, because February needed to be a little longer anyway.
Absolutely.
In terms
of that. So I'm not saying don't recognize it all, but just know that they are distinctly different.
Yes.
And so we had January, we had February, and now let's go to, this is a hint for some things he's known for. So what's the next month?
March. Oh, the March on Washington.
Yes.
Am I good, Mary?
So, you are very good. But you know what? The March on Washington, we're going to get to, but there was another pilgrimage. No, absolutely, that he was first. Do you know? Okay, so the March on Washington was 1963, and we're going to come back to that.
Okay.
There was another march that he was part of, another group that he was part of, and it was his first national address, and that was like 7 years before that. It was it was, yes, 1957.
Maybe the boycott. Was it?
It
the,
was nope. It, nope.
Oh, what?
This was May 17th, 1957. Write it down. He was part of the prayer pilgrimage for freedom.
Oh,
and
I
the
don't
topic
think I knew
that,
that
he discussed, or the topic that he talked about, was voting. And his title of his speech was "Give Us the Ballot," and that was his very first national address.
Well, he could be very much making that same address today.
Absolutely,
what an incredible piece of information that I was totally unaware of, folks. Let me just bring up to speed. If you're just joining us, I'm Carrie Hines. I'm on the line with the amazing Mary Reed Johnson from Hair Head Heart. She's our amazing guest coordinator and guest co-host this morning. And, boy, this is really a very special special broadcast right here, talking about 10 things that you should know about Dr. Martin Luther King. And I have to tell you, I don't know if I would be passing too well this morning on this. I know a few of them. But I'm learning. I'm learning along the way. I had no idea about that. That is incredible. Incredible stuff, Mary.
So,
good job. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I didn't do it. He did it. And
no, but
you know,
it's good that we know these things.
Yes, I think so. Because it's great that they highlight, you know, really important nuggets of his life. But if we dig, and you don't have to dig very deep, it's there. And he's just so much more rich and, you know, normal on some levels than us. I mean, it's the things that he did were iconic and blessings to millions. But part of his life, he was a regular person just developing. And I think that if you know that, then that maybe gives you hope to do more. Or at least continue to do the right things.
Absolutely. Well, I am super hyped.
Groovy. So we'll continue with March since you mentioned it. Number three, ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. And so that was the March on Washington. And it was supposed to be a peaceful march. It was a peaceful march. I don't know how many attended, but it was a big, big, big thing. And he did that famous march on the Capitol steps in Washington, 1963.
Wow. Amazing. It's hard to believe it was that long ago. That's amazing.
I know. It kind of is. I think of other icons that, you know, this year, one of my favorites, Muhammad Ali, he would be 80 this year.
Yes, which is still not, you know, it's still not really old, not these days. 80 is the new 70. And so there are a lot of 80-year-olds, like you, when you think of, you know, Jane Fonda, she's still thriving, and so many others out there. And look at the, you know, Betty White, who went all the way to almost 100, and Sidney Poitier and all these folks. So, yeah, you know, they're hanging in there these days. So Martin, so Dr. Martin Luther King would have been, he would have been in his, what, I think about 90 or so. He would have been in that ballpark somewhere. But good things, Mary Reed Johnson. I'm loving your countdown. Again, it's 10 things that we should know about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And I'm also phrasing it this way, 10 things that you probably thought you knew, but you didn't. And we're learning.
Yes, yes. So you mentioned something about aging and health and that type of stuff. So I'm going to mention some things in these last few that people tried to take him out of here. Like, do you know who Isola Ware Curry is? Or
no, no Isola idea Curry? What that even know? Is or what.
Okay, so they described her. When I say they, I say media and government. Described her as a mentally ill woman, all right? Mm. But she actually was in a crowd at a book signing, and she asked him, you know, make sure who he was, but she stabbed him with a 7-inch letter opener.
Oh, I think I did hear of this. Now, what was the significance of her doing this? It's just that she was mentally ill, and she just, you know, because you don't need a reason if you're mentally ill sometimes.
Right. So, well, that was part of it. And another part of it, she was blaming him for her losing jobs and, you know, these types of things. But the story just doesn't jive with me. But whatever it is, she was not successful in that attempt. And I won't say she didn't serve any time in jail, but she ended up her days pretty much in a nursing home in Jamaica, Queens. She lived to be like 98. Yeah, she lived to be 98. And so, and actually, I don't know if it was 2021 that she passed, but it wasn't that long ago. But
okay,
yeah,
wow.
Miss Isola is gone. She tried, but that.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines and Nicole Marie with Michael Hopkins and Blue. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
All right. I guess so. Right back. We are just going to take it from here. It's Mitch's show. It's Thursday, September 22nd of 2022. I'm Carrie Hines, and yes, I have a little bit of nasal congestion. Sorry for the weird sound. Let me bring everybody on. We've got Michael Hopkins. We've got Blue waiting in the wings with Candle Talk today. Blue, Michael Hopkins, are you guys there?
Good morning, yes.
All right. Michael, we're probably going to have to hold out. He probably wasn't expecting to get on this early. I'll put out an APB on Michael Hopkins. Lou, let's take it with the scent of the day. We skipped a day.
We skipped a day
with our scent of the day. So today, we're picking up, and I do want to say this is, again, Divine Energy Candles. Lou is the person behind the company who does our wonderful Mitch show, Candle Talk, the queen of candles, as we say. And so, Blue, what do you have for us today?
Good morning, Carrie. Yes, today we have something delicious and mouth-watering. It is caramelized pralines. It is a decadent and mouth-watering dessert fragrance oil. Notes of sea salt, caramelized sugar, and a rich brown sugar envelope, the nutty pecan and hazelnut, vanilla tonka bean, and a caramel enhances the buttery goodness of this delicious treat. We're going to get right to our top, middle, and base notes. For our top note, we have caramelized sugar and sea salt. For our middle note, we have butter, praline, pecan and brown sugar, also hazelnut. And for our base, we have caramel, vanilla, and tonka beans. This fragrance is awesome, awesome, awesome. And it also includes a little orange, patchouli, cedarwood, and clove leaf. So if you like pralines, you will love this candle.
Sounds like it. And I was going to ask you, which is the most popular? The wonderful food-based type candles or the floral botanical type candles? Is there one more popular than the other?
I would say no, because it depends on each customer's individual taste. You have some that really like the outdoor woodsy scents. You have some that like the food scents, the floral scents. Mm-hmm. You know, there's
like
a lot of...
I'm raising my hand.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too, because some days
I
feel like a ray of sunshine, and I want something, you know, something that's going to be a great pick-me-up, and then there's other days where I'm feeling like, hey, let's get some flowers going around here, you know, something a little florally. It depends on the day. In the summertime, you might want that beach scent flowing through your house, the outdoors, you know, candle burning that smells like the great outdoors, or some water scented candles. So it depends on your mood and, you know, what you're into.
Awesome. Well, tomorrow now, Divine Energy Candles on Friday, you guys do a recap of the week. So I'm excited about that. And also, I just want to let folks know.
Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be right and waiting. Tomorrow's a special show as well, and I guess this is as good a time as any. First, let me just bring everybody, thank you, Blue. Let me just bring everybody up to speed. We're live on this Thursday morning. It's our show number 760. It is 9/22/22. That's September 22nd of 2022, if you're into numbers. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to say, tomorrow on Friday, we have a very special guest, his first time joining us. Now, he is a firecracker, to put it mildly, and he'll be joining us on the Hair Radio Morning Show on Thursdays and Friday mornings, but he's rolling out onto our airwaves this Friday live. He'll be helping us to co-host in the last hour, and then we'll take it from there. But his name is, his name is Dr. Dyer, and I'm so excited to have him on the show. And I've been trying to get him for a while, and a little space opened up in his schedule, and we've got him. And we're shouting him out this morning, and so he's going to be an important part of our community lineup here. And so I'm super excited to have us to infuse some great energy into the broadcast. So it's going to be quite an interesting show as we kind of move forward. So I'm really excited about it. He's going to meet the staff and the team on Friday, tomorrow's show, at around 8 o'clock. And so you guys don't want to miss that. And coming up in just a few, it's going to be exciting. And coming up at about 8 o'clock today, I have the return of Jackrabbit Eats. So Jackie, she'll be with us, and just shouting her out this morning as well. It's quite an interesting show. I have moments and everything. My voice sounds pretty good, and so I'm going to go with it. Okay, so listen, I'm going to kind of stop talking for just a little bit. I'm going to see if we can get Michael Hopkins to weigh in for a quick minute or two. Michael Hopkins, we've got an APB out on Michael Hopkins from the Vet Talk Radio Show. Are you there, Michael Hopkins? I think we're going to have to track Michael Hopkins down. So stand by. And we will get take a little bit of a music break. And then coming up at around 8, like I said, we've got the return of Jackrabbit Eats. And it's so nice to be back with everybody, I have to really say. I don't feel 1,000,000%, but it's great to be back. All right, here we go. Thursday morning, September 22nd of 2022 is our show number 760. And I'm Carrie Hines. What is it, about 7:48? Let me bring everybody back in. We've got Blue from Jacksonville, Florida. She's the one behind the incredible candle company, Divine Energy Luxury Candles. And also, Michael Hopkins. We put out an APB on him. Michael Hopkins, are you there? From the Vet Talk Radio
I'm here.
Show.
Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning.
Happy mid-show to you, Hopkins, and all the fans out there. Let me just say that clearly. We took a day off yesterday, and, you know, just trying to keep it real with everybody. It's very rare that I don't feel up to par and up to speed. It's very rare. I don't even know the last time I didn't feel 100%.
So this is really a bit tough today, but we're going to get through all of this. You guys have, people were asking me yesterday, and am I okay, and is the show all right, and all of that. So I thank you so much, and particularly as well the people over at Upscale, shouting out the Upscale Magazine Radio people as well. I feel much better. I feel much better. And just had a chance to, and it's nice to be back at work doing what we do. And great to have you guys with us. So, Michael, we've been kind of just chatting a little bit here on Thursdays. You know how it is on Thursdays. It's a hodgepodge, I call it. And I just mentioned that Dr. Dyer will be joining us on Friday's show. And I think you have had an opportunity to meet him already. But yeah, he'll be joining us on Thursdays and Fridays in the weeks ahead. So he's going to be introduced to you guys on Friday morning. So I'm real excited. That'll be about 8 o'clock. And
oh,
then
yeah.
Coming up in just a few minutes. Yeah, so we've got he's a ball of fire. And real smart, very smart fella, and he does so much out there. So I'm super excited to have him with us. We're lucky to have him. And, I think I sound a little bit better. So maybe
you do. You actually do sound better. Much better.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Carrie, but you had my favorite lady on there this morning.
Which lady was the, Mary Reed Johnson.
Oh, yeah. And she was doing the top 10 for Dr. King.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite pieces.
Oh, it is.
By Mary.
It's one of mine, too.
We don't hear it that often. Yeah, we don't play it that much, but it is one of my favorites. Mary is, and you guys know the connection between she and our next guest coming up a little after 8, is the wonderful Jack Rabbit Eats. And they're both, we're out of Minneapolis. And they're great
friends.
Wow.
The home of Prince. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what she says all the time. I guess that's what you have to, you know, that's what everybody thinks of. And I've been to Minneapolis, but I don't think I've ever been to, I've never seen the Prince compound. And it was definitely, it's a compound. So anyway,
wow.
Real interesting stuff. So Blue, I'm excited for us to review some stuff. I think it's going to be really exciting how we kind of do some things. We have, like I said, Jackie's going to do some plant-based cooking talk in just a few minutes. What I think we're going to do, we have Jackie's original interview. And I think we should just remind everybody of that. It's only about maybe 5 to 10 minutes. So once that finishes, we'll roll right on in with our brand new big return to the broadcast, all new. So we want you to stay with us. Yeah, definitely. I think we're on the right track, on the mend. So stand by, everybody. We've got a lot more to get to this morning. Stand by.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
Are your favorite scented candles at Divine Energy Luxury Candles. I'm Carrie Hines. Divine Energy Luxury Candles create an unmatchable ambiance and can immediately enhance your mood. They offer an array of original scents made with coconut soy
hand-poured love. Fill your home and soothe your senses today. Order from DivineEnergyCandles.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Treat, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Aswaves Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout-out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand-new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air. I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story. And we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
We all know Madam C.J. Walker is often referred to as the nation's first documented self-made female African-American millionaire, who was known for her entrepreneurial skills as she built her hair care and cosmetic brand from scratch. This beautiful doll has a vibrant outfit that showcases Madam Walker's favorite colors, which were purple and turquoise. And this doll is very reasonable and available on Amazon and at Walmart for just about $35.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Terry Hines. I have a very special guest joining us. Now, she's from the world of nutrition. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome Jackie. Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast.
Good morning. Good morning, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, I do want to clarify, you're not just nutrition. You are actually all about healthy living. You have to tell us more about it.
Yes. I mean, I do like to cook, and that's part of the some of the things that I like to do. Jackrabbit plant-based cooking. But I also just like to talk about healthy living as well. You know, I want to be able to share some things with your audience and, you know, about healthy living. I want to be able to introduce, you know, nutrition. I want to talk about exercise, water, sunshine, temperance, air, and rest. And, you know, just trusting in the divine power and how important all of this is regarding our health and our nutrition. So it's just a whole gamut of things, you know. Eating right, nutrition is the number one thing, but there's other things that we need to be doing that we need to incorporate in our lives each and every day.
And what are some of those other things, too, that we should be doing?
some of those things that we should be doing outside of nutrition is, you know, we should be exercising every day. And when we think about exercise, we don't necessarily have to think about it as something like, you know, having a membership at a gym. It can be something as simple as walking every day, which is probably the best thing that, you know, we can do as far as exercise, you know, because we're stretching when we exercise, we're moving our limbs when we exercise, you know, we're getting sunshine, which is part of that, you know, staying healthy. We're going to intake some water because, you know, we need that hydration, and we need rest. And so in order to get that exercise in, we need to learn how to properly, you know, rest our bodies. You know, we need to
No, I was just, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yes. Well, what I'm getting from all of this, Jackie, is that for me, I look at making a big pizza pie. And each slice represents one of these things that you've just mentioned right here. And if you remove it, then it's missing a piece of that pie. It doesn't incorporate the whole pie. Somebody's ate a slice, basically. So you want to really start to focus on pulling everything together, and I think this is just awesome. And I want to back it up a little bit, you know, for our listeners out there. Let's just let folks know, you will be joining the lineup right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, I'm proud to say. So it's really great to have you coming on board to share these regular segments on healthy living. And again, healthy living incorporates so much. It's not just one little slice, pardon the pun. You know, it incorporates so many things, as you've just pointed out. So, Jackie, I kind of want to back up a little bit. Let's kind of start with this. Tell the folks where you are based out of. How did you become a healthy living czar? How did all this happen? How did this all start for you?
Okay, sure. Well, I'm based out of Minnesota, and it all started back when I was let's just say 16, because 16 is when I gave up beef, meat, and I've always had an interest in healthy living, and so, you know, as the years go by and as you get older, you realize, you know, I need these things as a part of my life in order to, you know, live the best that I can in my best life. And so that's kind of how it all got started, you know, just me stopping eating beef and then just, you know, doing reading and just, you know, trying to cook and just live, you know, healthy. And
well, what made you give up the beef at 16?
Well, years ago, my mother had gone to a place where she was learning on nutrition and health. And so she came back and she talked to us about it. And I think I just decided, you know, not to eat beef anymore. I never was a big meat eater growing up anyway, because I just didn't like the texture. You know, some of us are texture eaters, you know, like, say, for an example, some people just hate tofu because it's just too soft. And so I just do not.
I'm raising my hand right now in case you didn't know that out there.
Right. So, you know, texture sometimes has a lot to do with things as far as why we eat things, why we don't eat things. But, yeah, so I just decided to give up beef and, you know, just reading things about beef and knowing that it wasn't really the best, you know, meat for us at that time. So I figured if I was going to start somewhere, let me start with the beef. And we never ate pork, so my next meat would have been beef. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is just interesting. So I find this really fascinating. And I think that the fans out there, and you guys, you'll be able to pass along whatever questions you have for Jackie, who will be talking about this with her Healthy Living segment right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show each week. Now, I want to be clear. So your 30-minute show within a show will be starting soon on our network. So we're going to keep you guys out there informed so that you'll know when to tune in. And until then, you can reach out to Jackie right through our Salon TV Network app here at Hair Radio, so which is just awesome. You can download the app at the Google Play Store, Salon TV Network, and you'll be able to connect with Jackie through that. Now, I'm excited about this Jack Rabbit Eats. So this is the
wonderful healthy living segment that is going to be plant-based cooking. Now, Jack, I got to ask you, Jackie, what's the name Jackrabbit all about? The listeners would never let me live it down if I didn't ask you the name Jackrabbit. So what is that all about?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Carrie, because, you know, it's just my name is Jackie, as I mentioned, and I'm the youngest of six children. And so my family called me Jack Rabbit. And so that was a nickname that was given to me by my dad.
And
so when I decided to do plant-based cooking, it had nothing to do with the fact that rabbits, you know, they don't eat meat. Nothing at all. It was just fitting for the fact that I eat plant-based, you know. And so that's where the name Jack Rabbit Eats Plant-Based Cooking comes from. So it's just a family nickname, and I just incorporated it into what I like to do.
Well, it gets no better than that. That was just the divinity of it all. I just think it's amazing. It really is. Well, listen, I am excited to have you here on the network, as I mentioned. What would you like to see yourself bringing to this whole piece of the pie? And why did you want to come to our network? Share that with everybody.
Well, I just wanted to be able to relate a message out there regarding healthy living and just let people know that it's nothing, you know, really hard to do. It's something that, yeah, we have to try to do every day, you know, regardless whether it's eating right, our nutrition, whether it's exercising, whether it's drinking enough water or, you know, making sure we get enough sunshine, you know. I just want people to live their best life and live as healthy as you possibly can, because I think it's just very important for us as, you know, as people in this world. It just gives us clarity in our thinking. It just introduces us to an awesome way of, you know, just being healthy and sharing that healthiness with others and, you know, and just being happy. And when we're happy, we want to share things. I mean, I do. I like to share things with people when it makes me happy and makes me feel good.
Awesome. Can say it no better than that. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much. Did you have anyone you want to shout out to before we sign off?
Sure. I want to give a shout out to my family, you know, my husband who has been behind me with this and who has encouraged me to go ahead and do this, Michael. I want to give a shout out to my sister, Alicia, who has also encouraged me to, you know, to step out there, get out of my comfort zone. And just anybody that I know, I can't call everybody by name, but just know that I love you and that if you're listening to this broadcast, I hope that it brings you inspiration and I hope it brings you encouragement.
It gets no better than that. However, it does, because you're also going to be doing a series of videos of cooking demonstration videos. Again, plant-based, I call it healthy cooking. It's healthy living segment, and you're going to be doing a version of this exclusively for our Salon TV network. So as long as you have our app, you'll be able to watch Jackie on camera leading you throughout your healthy living. And again, she's going to be talking about a whole lot of wonderful things, and we just so support you, and we look so forward to all of this. Again, I want to thank you for being with us this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Carrie.
All right.
Did you know that the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hines is the longest-running radio broadcast on hair and beauty talk in the world? It's a broadcasting hair industry institution. Be a live guest on air and join our long list of amazing celebrities and hair and beauty industry luminaries who've all been on our show. Give our office team a call at 833-402-8882. Again, that's 833-402-8882. Or visit us online at hairradio.com. Because you haven't made it until you've made it to Hair Radio.
Okay, everybody. Thank you, Angela. Yes, it's Thursday morning, September 22nd. That was just an incredible classic interview with Jackrabbit Eats and Jackie. I had forgotten all about, yes, it talked about our Salon TV network that we will be bringing back soon and so much other stuff. But really, what's the interesting thing is that Jackie has done a brand new interview with our show. So we are so excited. So just go ahead and let it roll right on in. And we'll talk on the other side of this. So stay tuned. We've got a lot more to get to this morning.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I have a very, very special guest joining us today. It's been a while since she's been with us, but you guys know who she is. It is my great honor and pleasure to welcome back Jackrabbit Eats. Good morning, Jackrabbit Eats. Good morning, Jackie. How are you?
Good morning, Carrie. I am doing good. I am doing good. Just been busy working on some things and so glad to be back on the show.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get into all that you've been doing and just kind of catch everybody up a little bit on that and so much more that we're going to talk about today. But first, Jackie, I want to say this. You are a specialist when it comes to plant-based cooking. So just remind everybody what plant-based cooking is all about.
Well, plant-based cooking is just basically, you know, a good way to eat healthy. You're not eating things, you know, that's animal products or animal byway products such as dairy and, you know, eggs and cheese and things of that nature.
And is it difficult to maintain a diet that's plant-based cooked food?
No, it's not actually difficult at all. I mean, it's just, you know, a few things that you need to know when you are eating plant-based so that you can get all your nutrients in, you know. One thing about plant-based cooking, you just have to know how to color that plate so that you can get all these healthy foods into your system.
And when you say color that plate, what do you mean?
I mean, color your plate. So when we eat, you know, we want to make sure we get in our green leafy vegetables. We want to make sure we get in our purple foods, you know, our yellow foods, things like, you know, making sure we're having our fruits, our colorful foods, you know, so like your grapes, your strawberries, your cantaloupe, your watermelons, all those things like that. You want to make sure that you're eating your legumes, you know, which are your beans, your peas, eating your seeds, your nuts. And when I say seeds and nuts, too, let's not have things like, you know, the raw seeds and nuts, not necessarily, you know, loaded with salt.
Very important.
Your protein,
I am so excited.
Yes, yeah.
And we're going to talk a whole lot more about this incredible plant-based cooking that you are the queen of. And for the very first time, we're really having these conversations on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And so this is really quite an honor. It really is. Now, I've got to say, because I want to go back a little bit, Jackie. Everybody remembers you. We did a little piece a while ago, and they kind of remember you from doing the plant-based cooking, of course, but some of your story. And I wanted to just bring everybody up to speed on that. Now, you are based out of where?
Well, right now I'm based out of Minneapolis, home of Prince. But I was born and raised.
Home of Prince, the superstar.
Yes, when you say Minneapolis, you speak of Prince, and people, you know, they may know exactly where you are.
They know.
Yeah.
And Paisley Park, that's all we can think of.
Exactly.
Wow. So, well, if that's the case, so where were you born?
Well, I was born in Memphis, Tennessee, born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee, home of the
Memphis. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecue. Such an incredible historic place, by the way.
It is. I mean, yeah. when you think of Memphis, you know, you think of hospitality, you think of Southern roots, you think of Beale Street, home of the blues, as I mentioned, barbecue, Elvis Presley, you know. So it has a lot of good
historical
things.
There's so much. Yes, there's such a richness culturally. You know, and not to gloss over some of those things, really,
You talk about the home of the blues. Well, most folks don't realize that. You know, so the home of the blues, and we're talking about all kind of folks. It reminds me of Muddy Waters and all these people. And then on top of that, you know, you have barbecue, which my favorite way to say it now, since that lady, I ain't got no time for that, barbecue. So that's what she calls it, barbecue. I still can't say it like she says it, but that's the home of barbecue. So food has always been rich and permeated the city of Memphis, and we're real proud of that. So you took all of that, all of that culture, that Southern hospitality, and you packed up and took it to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yes.
Right.
So, Jackie, how have they been responsive to the whole idea of plant-based cooking in the Minneapolis area?
Yes, we have quite a few plant-based restaurants that's here. Actually, I was at one just Friday and enjoyed a wonderful gyro there, you know, made with the seitan meat. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's just a...
Not at all. What is that? Tell us about that kind of meat and what that is all about.
Yeah, it's actually made with gluten, with flour, and you know, lots of seasonings. And they basically, because with gluten, you know, it just stretches, and so that's how you can get that meat consistency. So, and it had just, you know, wonderful toppings, cucumbers, lettuce, and it had a plant-based... what was the sauce? They had a plant-based cucumber sauce. And so it was just a
really good. Mm-hmm. It sounds really good. So, Jackie, go ahead.
No. I was like, it was really good. And that's just one of the things that, you know, I want to bring to the Hair Radio show. I want to, you know, with my different recipes, some of the things that I do like to cook, and I do like to cook some of the seitan meats, you know, to give you that not chicken, not beef or steak, but something that's similar to that you will really enjoy.
Okay. Well, we're going to really hold you to that now. Hey, folks, if you're just joining us out there, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and I'm so excited to have her back on the show. This is the first time in a while since we've chatted with Jackrabbit Eats. And this is all new. Jackie will be joining us quite often with all kinds of amazing dishes, some the historical context and community type things as well that, you know, that lends itself to your dishes and the food and the healthy aspects of it. But we're also going to talk, you know, just remind some folks, like you said, you're originally from the Memphis area, and that is very, you know, very Southern style. Is that where your roots were formed or formulated, you know, how you came together with this discovery of cooking? Where did you develop this passion for food?
Right. Well, I developed a passion for food from my mother. And, you know, of course, relatives, you know, of my mom. And, you know, we always had good Southern cooking, and we all know what good Southern cooking is. But what I wanted to do was kind of change some of the concept that, you know, when you eat Southern food, it's basically unhealthy food because of a lot of the fats and the oils and the, you know, different meats that we use to flavor our food with. And so I wanted to have something that was Southern cooking, but delicious and more plant-based. And so those are the things that I focus on, you know, with other things as well. So, you know, with my roots, you know, you don't want to give up your roots. I don't care where you come from, if you're from the north, south, east, or west, south.
Yes,
so,
yes,
you know,
important.
I love those things, runny and cheese and greens and biscuits and, you know, gravies, more healthy.
And slapping up, put the biscuits and slurping it up. Smothered. I'm a fan of smothered foods and all of that. So I haven't quite migrated yet, but that's why Jackie's here, so that I can start that slow migration process over to plant-based cooking. But I am still in that. I love some gravy and some biscuits and all that stuff. So I am, but I'm learning. I'm going to pay attention to Jackrabbit Eats today. Now, listen. Yes, and I do want to shout out the South. Like you said, my family, both of my parents were from Goldsboro area in North Carolina. And so I just, I grew up on those delicious foods in the South. Even though I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So I grew up on that. But I have to tell you, it's very interesting. So listen, we're going to turn to today. What, and Jackie's going to be with us, Jackrabbit Eats, she's going to be sharing all kinds of recipes with us, and that really starts today. And so, Jackrabbit Eats, what do you have on the plate to serve up today?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, there's an old adage that says, less is more. And so when we're reading, and, you know, my rule of thumb is that, you know, like I said, less is more and possibly healthier. And so we need to get into the habit of, you know, the ingredients rather than just what's on the front of the package. So with that being said, I have a recipe with only a few ingredients. And I like to eat a lot of raw foods because raw foods is really, really healthy for you. So today, you know, what about a broccoli salad? You know, hair things. We don't have to just steam broccoli or roast our broccoli, and all those ways are excellent. But today with a broccoli salad, you know, we can just take some fresh broccoli, you know, cut it into some bite-sized pieces, add a little red onion to it, a little craisins, you know, with reduced sugar because we want to kind of stay away from so much refined sugar. We're going to add a few sunflower seeds in it. We're going to sweeten it up with a little honey, and we're going to take some freshly squeezed lemon juice. And you can either make your own mayonnaise, and I can get into that another time, or you can just check out a recipe that I may have on the community page, or you can use a plant-based mayonnaise, and we'll just mix all of that together, and there you have it. You have your beautiful, fabulous broccoli salad.
Now, look, I and you guys out there, I'm loving this. This took less than 5 minutes to get the ingredients and how to mix it together. And you're talking about food I call living foods, things that are healthy and have a real great benefit to them. So this is great where you can have a broccoli salad. And what I love about your broccoli salad also is that you include a little story and stuff and give folks the ingredients and all of that. Go to HAIRadio.com. That's HAIRadio.com. And there's a big blue button to click on the stories there, and you'll see Jackie's story about the broccoli salad listed amongst them. And feel free to read on. It's free. And if you are so engaged, you can and enthralled, you can sign up to become a member if you'd like. It's totally free. Again, HAIRadio.com. So I'm loving this. Now, I know since you put up this wonderful story about broccoli salad, you've gotten some feedback. What have you heard, Jackie?
I've heard things like, wanting to switch over to a more plant-based eating.
Yeah.
People and like, how do you do that? And when I switched to a plant-based diet, my plant-based diet provided all the necessary proteins. I had to learn that, you know, I needed all the necessary proteins, the fats, the carbohydrates, you know, the vitamins and minerals for optimal health. And that's what you want when you do that. And I had to realize that I needed, you know, more fiber. So those are things that I'm going to, you know, talk about how I made some changes in my life and how I noticed a difference in my health. And I enjoy just learning everything I can about, you know, living a healthier life. And I just want to share that passion with others as well.
Well, I think on that note, it doesn't get any better than that. Jackrabbit Eats. We're talking with Jackie today. Jackie, and I know that you'll be bringing us all kinds of amazing plant-based cooking ideas and things like that. And again, guys, you can follow Jackie. Now, she is a member at our online community. It's called the Hair Radio Online Community. It's spelled, I'll give you the whole website. It's www.hairadio.com. So it's pronounced Hair Radio. It only has one R in the middle. Go there, and whether you use your laptop or phone or however you access things on the internet, there's a big blue button once you get to the website right at the top that says read post free. Click here. Doesn't get any clearer than that. Check it out. There's a bunch of listings of items there that you're going to love. Great posts that we say. You can read the post there with Jackie's incredible broccoli salad. So that sounds so good. And with only a few, it was like, Jackie, just a handful of ingredients. Very quick and easy.
Correct.
All right. So plant-based cooking is not, you know, we've always heard these things that made it sound like it was complex and so difficult to follow. But it sounds like that's just the opposite.
Yeah, it really is. Once you get an understanding of how to eat, and knowing that you don't need, you know, certain foods like, you know, meat in order to get your protein. There's, you know, there's other ways of getting your proteins. And to be honest, just about everything, you know, we eat, we're going to find some protein in those meals and these healthy fats. So, you'll be just fine switching over to a plant-based diet or trying to introduce yourself to, you know, less animal fat products. And you'll do great. You'll do great.
Now, does this lend itself to losing weight? Can you lose a few pounds with these plant-based diets?
Yes,
I mean, I'm raising my hand if you can.
I'm signing up. You can, because really and truly, it's all, with anything that we eat, you know, we have to not indulge so much, you know, like overeating.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, that's what it's dollars of what you eat. I mean, you can eat all the healthy foods you want, but if you're still eating too much of anything, you know, we have that that opportunity that whereas we may gain, you know, some weight. But if we eat, you know, correctly with the right portions and really, really so much worrying about your portions when you're eating plant-based, it will help you in your weight loss.
Well, that sounds amazing. Hey, folks, we're talking to Jackrabbit Eats. We're so excited. She'll be back with us often here on the network. We're overjoyed, really, because it's going to give a lot of us a chance to kind of revolutionize our diets. We'll naturally start to get a little bit better in shape physically. And I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say I think mentally, too. I think what you put in your body affects everything. And so am I right? So I'm just so happy. Okay, now again, go to the Hair Radio online community at www.hairadio.com. Check out Jackie's Jackrabbit Eat post all about this incredible dish, broccoli salad. We can't wait for your next posting. Jackie, thanks so much. Anybody you want to shout out to before we go this morning?
Oh, sure. Thank you, Carrie. Yes, I want to give a shout-out to my husband, Michael, to my children, to family and friends, you know, to my coworkers. And I just want to just say thank you, Carrie, for allowing me to be on the hairradioshow.com, and I enjoyed everything.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, we will see you back here very, very soon. We'll be listening back for Jackrabbit Eats. Again, I'm Carrie Hines, and I want to thank Jackie for being with us. Thank you so much, Jackie.
Coming soon, don't miss the brand new Hair Radio streaming network show, I Love the 90s. Take a listen back to interviews of the biggest names in music, including CeCe Peniston. Tony Terry.
It's for real.
course, Destiny's Child. Tune in and enjoy the memorable moments with The Hair Radio and their lineup of amazing artists telling their stories, giving insights, and of course, talking hair and beauty right here on Hair Radio.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hines, and I've been in the hair and beauty industry for 25 years. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce you to Carapie Shampoo and Carapie Conditioner, two unique all-natural hair products from Carrie Hines Hair Care, especially formulated to remedy any type of hair issue. And the biggest benefit of all is that Carapie Shampoo and Carapie Conditioner grows hair. Carrie Hines Hair Care is the very first African-American-based company to infuse hair care products with caffeine. Why caffeine? Well, many of you are aware that stimulating the scalp is truly what causes the hair follicles to awaken. We were most interested in developing a proprietary formula that works on all hair types, whether you have a relaxer or are a naturalista, and not wash away or strip the hair following a color treatment. We're thrilled at the amazing following of Carapie, and we thank you. Please register at Carapie.com and join our Carapie community at HairRadio.com. Again, I'm Carrie Hines. Thank you. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, my very special guest with us is Dr. Praneet James. You know her well. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome back Dr. Praneet James. Good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Carrie. Thank you very much for having me on again. I feel like I'm back home.
You are. You're amongst family here. Well, listen, yes. I just wanted to say, first of all, it is our honor to have you on. I mean, you are the noted trichologist out there. Amongst so many things, just that you're doing these days. But we go back a little bit. I want to say it's been a while.
Yes, it has. Now,
Dr. Praneet James, I want to say that I remember you, you know, you were part of the How to Get Rich in the Hair business book several years ago. It's been several years at this point. But let's talk about your career. Now, with trichology, that's a big thing out there. We always have to tell folks because not everyone is still, even at this time, as familiar with what trichology is all about. So let's start at the beginning. Tell everybody a little bit about what trichology is all about.
Absolutely. Trichology is the study of the hair and the scalp. I work very closely with men, women, and children suffering from various hair and scalp disorders, hair loss, or just in general trying to get their hair to a healthy state. So I actually take a holistic approach to overall hair health.
I see. And what does that approach include? Because when you say a holistic approach, what does that mean?
A holistic approach. I'm also a naturopathic doctor. And we take, again, the holistic approach, meaning I take approach from the body system. Our body has 12 different systems, so normally when someone comes in for hair loss, what I do is do a body scan, and what that does is it tells me exactly what body systems are out of range. So, for example, a lot of my women that come in, they have their glandular system is out of range. Now, the glandular system is the system that houses their adrenal glands. That's the system that helps them to sleep. That's the system that consists of, you know, the menopause issues stem from that particular system, a lot of your autoimmune issues. So if that system is out of range, of course, it's going to reflect in the hair. So that's what I like to do. We get to the culprit of what's actually going on versus just topically treating. So about a 97% of my patients that I treat have a nutritional deficiency, which, of course, is the major contributing factor to the hair loss. So by getting to that culprit, we're going to prevent them from, you know, spinning their wheels. Just like if someone has a circulatory system, you probably say, what does that have to do with hair loss? It has a lot to do with it, because if the circulatory system is out of range, then it's going to reflect in the hair, because the blood, you know, of course, the circulatory system controls the blood, and if there is a blockage or inflammation in the body, the blood is flowing to the papilla. The papilla is what feeds the actual hair follicle. So, again, if there is a blockage, then, of course, that's going to block the hair growth and cause, you know, hair loss, et cetera. So huge. You know, our body systems, that's a, you know, like I said, if it's something that's out of range, then it's going to reflect in the hair. Our hair is the barometer of our health. So pretty much if you have some type of, you know, a major health condition or if something is out of range, it's going to reflect in the hair first.
And what did you say? Was that 97% in terms of some kind of diet deficiency, if you will?
Oh, absolutely. About 97% of the patients I treat have a nutritional deficiency, which, of course, contributes to the hair loss. This is, you know, just like if someone starts a diet, they may say, okay, Dr. James, I'm starting a new diet, you know, for the better, I'm trying to lose weight. You know, if you're starting a new diet, whether good or bad, you know, for the better or the, you know, the worse, it's going to reflect in the hair because that's going to throw off your hormonal system. You know, your hormones. So if the hormones are out of range, then, of course, that's going to throw the glandular system out of range, which will reflect in the hair. So a balanced diet, you know, balanced hair care regimen, you know, eating a balanced meal, et cetera, making sure that you're getting your supplements in, et cetera, is major in achieving healthy hair because healthy hair is basic. So if the body is healthy, then the hair is going to be healthy.
It's hard, though, to get to that. That's why it's so important to have a great relationship with your stylist and a trichologist. Do folks need both?
I would say if the customer, say, for instance, someone came into the hairstylist and the hairstylist saw that the client was suffering from hair loss, then, of course, I would say yes. I would recommend them referring them to a trichologist. A lot of times when clients come in and they're experiencing hair loss or dandruff, you know, excessively, or seborrheic dermatitis or any other, you know, psoriasis, any other type of scalp condition, normally the hairstylist would refer their client to a dermatologist. And, you know, not saying that a dermatologist can't help. Everyone has their place. But when they're sent to a dermatologist pretty much, derma means skin. Trich means hair. So if you send your customer to a dermatologist, pretty much they're going to recommend more so a synthetic approach, you know, cortisone injections, topical treatments, and solutions wherein they're not getting to the culprit of what's going on. They're just pretty much pacifying the problem. When you're dealing with hair loss issues, first you have to go in and stop the hemorrhaging. You know, I'm just kind of using an analogy here. But you have to, if you go in an emergency room, they can't operate on you until you stop the issue or, you know, you stop the hemorrhaging, then you can treat the wound. So that's the approach I take when I'm dealing with hair loss. You know, there's no one size that fits all. So I place my patients on a customized regimen.
Absolutely. And you can work in tandem with these dermatologists and these doctors. These medical doctors as well. So that's what's awesome.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, everyone has their place, yes.
Absolutely. Now, I want to talk about, I have to delve into hair loss because it's so huge. It's so huge. So I want to talk about some of the signs and for folks to recognize if they are suffering from hair loss. And as you mentioned, of course, they need to see a trichologist, of course. In most cases, but what are some of the early signs that they should look out for?
Early signs of hair loss, they will experience excessive itchiness or burning at the high crown, or if you are experiencing maybe a very small bald spot in an isolated area, like a perfect circle, that would be alopecia areata. That's normally caused by stress. So it affects the immune system, the autoimmune issue. So normally that will, you know, grow back once the stress is under control. But for the most part, if they're experiencing, you know, as I mentioned, a small bald spot that disappears out of some, you know, out of the blue, or excessive shedding or burning or itchiness uncontrollable in the scalp, then I would say yes, those are signs of early hair loss or just thinning, you know, thinning throughout the diffuse thinning, you know, the hair is thinning and it's like, okay, what's going on? So those are early signs of hair loss. And when you're dealing with hair loss, treating the issue of getting to the culprit means a whole lot. Time is an essence when you're dealing with hair loss, because hair loss actually happens in phases, just like any major disease. You know, you have stage 1 through before. So, of course, if you catch it in the earlier stages, you have a more of a greater chance of the hair being restored or, you know, actually stabilizing the hair versus the hair progressing, you know, the hair loss progressing.
Exactly. Wow. So that's very important. And with, like you said, with anything, the earlier that you can catch it and detect it, the greater chance of success or, you know, to make it a little bit better or what have you, better outcome, we should say.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to talk about a little bit of this. And I remember from your interview here way back when, several years back, remember that you talked about, you know, the difference because there was a whole thing where, and I just wonder, do you still feel that way today about that women kind of, you know, still kind of lag behind, so to speak, when it comes to reporting the hair loss as opposed to the guys? You know, we guys, we tend to, you know, kind of be out there a little bit, well, we were out there a little bit more with dealing with the subject of hair loss because of, like, male pattern baldness and all of this, that we kind of, it's just been out there and it's been almost anticipated and expected and almost accepted society-wise for guys. But for females, perhaps that might not have been the case or wasn't the case. Well, how do you feel today, and what do you speak to? How do you speak to that?
I'm still pretty strong on what I mentioned, you know, the last time. As for just as a whole, you know, women suffering from hair loss or hair loss as a whole, they're behind about 10 years, you know, behind with men.
Wow.
You know, normally their hair loss issues start in their 40s, wherein, you know, male hair loss starts, you know, many men that are, you know, suffering hair from hair loss or have early signs, you know, their signs will start in their 20s. But as for being more accepted, I would say yes, with the men, definitely is more accepted. However, with my female clients, they have more support. I feel like that they support one another more than men. Men are more private about it, so they're not going to have a conversation with another guy, you know, saying I'm going bald. I need some help. Do you know anyone that can help me? Or what type of treatments are you using for, you know, your balding issues? So women are more open about it within their circle. Wherein men are more private. So anytime that I do a consultation with the male versus a female, normally when the male comes in and I express to them what's going on and I share with them, you know, what is needed to restore their hair, normally, you know, they take a little bit longer to make a decision. So what I actually do is I take a picture of the hair. Well, this is what I used to do. Now that we have more advanced technology, you know, back in the day, I used to just take like a picture, Polaroid picture, and just let it sit there and develop. And I step out of the consultation room, and by the time I come back, they've taken a look at it to see, because a lot of them don't realize that, okay, this is major, until they actually see a picture of what's going on.
That's right.
So now what I do is I offer a microscopic analysis where we can, you know, take a look at the follicle activity under the microscope. So that just kind of brings everything to real life, if that makes sense. So they can see exactly, you know, what's going on. And it just kind of brings everything in and gives them a clearer picture.
Like,
if that makes
that.
Sense, they can kind of see, they can kind of see what stage that they're in, what's happening, you know, at the follicle area or in the scalp.
Wow. And that's actually very good, because then, but at the same time, it can be a little surprising. And I've seen some of those analysis, and boy, oh boy, some of those on the screen, it can really shock you. I've got to tell everybody, and I love how you used to always talk about identifying the curl pattern and all of that. And I still think it's very interesting. And, you know, in terms of, you know, letting it help you to figure out what types of products and all that, hair products and all of that. And would you be able to just share that again with our audience, Dr. Breenie James? Just tell everybody again about the identification. That would be great.
Well, absolutely. You know, everybody's into natural hair now. I think it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. So a lot of the consumers have went natural, and a lot of them are still product junkies. And you hear me talk about this all the time. They're just using any and everything on their hair. First of all, when you go natural, you still have to maintain the health of your hair, you know, making sure that you're getting your proper shampoos, conditioners, leave-ins, et cetera. However, you want to make sure that you are using a system that works in unity. And what's going to help to determine your outcome is identifying your curl type first. That's going to take the guesswork out of what products are going to work best for you. Just because you're seeing someone on YouTube doesn't mean, you know, and their hair looks great, doesn't mean your hair is going to turn out like that, you know, with the products that they use. So the first step, especially when you are completely natural, is to identify your curl type. Once you identify your curl type, whether it is, you know, in the three or the four, normally, you know, African-American hair is either going to be level three or four, then we have the A, B, C curl type. So, of course, the A's are going to be more of a looser pattern, you know, a straight wavy, and then midway B, and then C is a little bit tighter, okay? And then when you identify either three or four, that's getting more into the texture itself. But back to the question or addressing the question that you asked, once they identify that curl type again, that's going to say, hey, you know, my hair needs a little, if it's tightly coily, and of course you want to, say for instance, you're 4B, that's tight and coily. So you want to actually use products or product lines that's going to give you more elongation or stretch to the hair. Normally when someone is 3C, then that's a little bit more frizzy. So you may want to use something, however, your hair is more finer in the 3 category. So, of course, you don't want to use, like, your heavier creams. You want to use something that's going to give you flow, airiness to the hair, but also prevent the hair from becoming frizzy and, you know, dry looking. So you want something that's, of course, going to define. So you use more of your mousses and your setting lotions in the 3 category, and then when you get into the 4s, you can start incorporating your creams. And there are, of course, there are tons of products on the market, and a lot of consumers are confused. But like I said, once they determine what their hair type or curl type is, again, that's going to take the guesswork out of what they need. And the 4s, they'll use more of the creams, and whether it be something, you know, they want more definition or if they want more elongation, that's something that can be determined by looking at the label on the product, and it'll pretty much tell you or not this product is a defining gel or defining cream gel, or this is something wherein is going to give your hair more stretch, like a stretching cream.
Well,
and, you know, that's pretty much it. Once you identify, that'll take your guesswork out of, you know, what's going to work best for you. It just depends on what product line, you know, you want to go with, whatever your preference is from there.
Absolutely. What's great about it is that that's something that you can help to, you can certainly speak to your hairstylist about to help you with that.
Definitely.
Right? I'm just loving this. Well, Dr. Pranit James, we have to tell everybody. Now, folks, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, I am on the line with, I call it the legendary Dr. Pranit James. I absolutely do. And you've just been with us at shows and just have done so much in the way of leading the trichology folks out there and also helping so many folks with your wonderful shop out there and the clinic and all of that. So now tell everybody, you are located where? Where are you located these days and all that good stuff?
Well, actually, you know, pretty much I've been global, and I'll get into that in a moment to kind of bring everyone up to speed. But my central location, I'm located in the beautiful city of Virginia Beach, Virginia, in the Hampton Roads area. So that's pretty much my central location. But I travel all over the world, actually. I've traveled quite a bit from here, between here and Nigeria. So I've pretty much kind of went global now. So
I see.
Really
now, we've got a Yes, well, we have to say how honored we are. I mean, my goodness, you've done lots of changes since we've last checked in with you,
absolutely,
Dr. Pranit James.
So
now I want to talk about this new name, the Beard Huntress. You've got to tell us what that's all about.
Yes.
The Beard Huntress. Okay, I'm loving it.
You know, that kind of, I actually kind of I don't know how to put this, but I came across, it started out as a really fun project for me, but I didn't think it was going to go as far as it has went or taken me thus far. I started out with a beard care company, and I started treating male beards, you know, and it was quite different, you know, from my average day-to-day work that I do as for treating hair loss, et cetera. So I began to like it. I'm like, okay. And then once I started to brand myself as the Beard Huntress, why trust your beard to anyone else? And then with my logo, it's like, okay, I was getting all these bearded guys, you know, requesting my services. And then I'm like, okay, well, beards are is hair.
Exactly.
It's simply hair, same, you know. So I just took the same approach that I used towards hair loss to actually start growing in their beards. I mean, I would get guys to come in that had problem issues, balding
right.
spots in their beard areas, or they may have, you know, they had seborrheic dermatitis or even, you know, eczema or, you know, psoriasis within the beard area. So I just took the same approach, and I've had such success with this tier of my business to the point where, and I took it globally over to Nigeria, and I, prior to the pandemic, I was due to conduct the Nigerian Beard Festival wherein I had crowned, I was going to crown the Beard King of Nigeria. So I have a huge audience over there and even here in the United States and even in Europe just from the Beard Huntress concept. So it has definitely taken me really, really far and opened up a lot of other opportunities, and I love it. This is a fun project to me, and it's so rewarding to see the guys grow their beards out so healthy and so forth, and to see all this eye candy around me. I love it. I love it.
Well, this is where we are definitely going to explore all of that, especially on this end where we kick off our amazing beard magazine. We already know who we're going to first. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
We're just so excited. And Nigeria. So talk a little bit about what's happening over there in terms of the hair industry. It's a little different than here in America, but maybe you can shed some light on that.
Oh, absolutely. My last visit to Nigeria, I actually went on a tour. I did more or less pop-ups at your trying to get to know the market. It is quite
right.
different. It's a harder market. But once they get to know you and you brand yourself, they love you. They love you. They're very loyal. But it takes a little time to break the ice. Whatever you're doing, you know, whatever products you're recommending to them, they have to truly know that it works. And, you know, once you get a few people, like influential people over there, you know, getting them to use your products, then everyone else pretty much kind of falls in line, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I went over there. My goal was to research the market. So I connected with a lot of the beauty industry professionals, such as your barbers, your, you know, your hairstylists, a lot of salon owners, makeup artists, et cetera, and was very successful with connecting with them. My goal was to connect more so, like I said, with a lot of the influencers. And once I connected with them, it was like, okay, it just really took off. So the challenge over there is the hair care product is very limited. So when you bring a product over there that truly works, they are very, very receptive because they don't have a lot of options there. In addition, we actually did a survey to see exactly what they were looking for, what were their issues in the hair care industry. And, of course, the first issue or challenge was hair loss. They want that's in demand. They want product that's going to help the hair grow. The other issue was hair color. But, yeah, those were the two issues. And just having a dependable, you know, hair care line, the weave on, they call it weave on. Of course, we call it, you know, tracks or, you know, weave
right.
or so they call it weave on. That's very much in demand. And you would think over there they would charge more for braiding, but you can get a whole head full of single, tiny, tiny micro braids for like $20 wearing.
$20, charging, did you say?
$20, yes, you can get, and they're very, very nice.
wow.
You can
We're
get,
heading
get
over to Nigeria.
Yes, everybody, like, let me get my hair braided. But they
wow.
charge more for hair weaving, you know, hair weaving and lace, the lace wigs, the hair replacement units are huge over there. So, but for the most part, I love the market. It's a new market for me. It's a challenge. And right now I have a Nigerian hair care business group on WhatsApp that I put together, organized, that's been very, very successful and is growing because I really want to reach the beauty industry. It's very important that they know that they're worth more than what they're charging. So I'm going to be offering a lot of business classes on how to, you know, charge, how to brand themselves. You know, if they, like the barbers, they're cutting hair for very little over there. And, they, you know, they're very talented. But, you know, they just need some help as for the branding. You know, a lot of them, you know, I was talking with some of the barbers. I'm like, if you just add a little bit more, slow down, add a little bit more detail to your work, you know, you can make, a, you know, a little bit more. You know, you may reduce the amount of customers that you're servicing, but you could charge more. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I'm looking forward. I'm going to be conducting a lot of, when I return, when they open the country, I'm going to be returning back, and the goal is to conduct hair or beauty industry summits, introducing, like I said, the business and so forth. So I'm looking forward to that. I have a lot of projects that are on standby right now based upon, you know, once everything opened back up that I've planned or put into action.
Yes, well, I can already see that the next year is going to be a huge, huge, huge year for you, as always.
Yes.
And
yes,
you're always planning some amazing things. So I have to say, what are some of the next big steps right away? What's this thing? If they're announced, everybody's open tomorrow. Are you going to just catch a flight on out of here?
I am. Yes, I am. I'm on standby. All they have to do is give me the go. Yes,
I tell you. Well, I have to say, you know, when it comes to setting hair goals and talking about hair loss and working with these amazing folks over in Nigeria and working with the gentlemen in beards, we just say you stay busy. You really do. So we are just amazed. Now, how can our folks out there, again, look you up? How can they, of course, connect with you? Now, of course, they can do it through the Hair Radio Morning Show and our app.
Mm-hmm.
But how would what would you also tell them they can also catch up with you?
Well, one way they can catch up with me is via telephone. I can be reached at area code 757-914-5393. That's 757-914-5393. The second way that they can contact me is via my social media platforms. Of course, my salon is Fruit of the Spirit Salon, so my social media platforms are also branded that way, Fruit of the Spirit Salon with an S, and that's on IG as well as Facebook.
Awesome. Well, listen, Dr. James, I have to say I certainly want to check with and see if there's anybody you want to shout out to today right here on our show.
Well, first, of course, I want to definitely give my mother a shout out. Without her,
we love her.
None of this would be possible. Yes.
Yes. Big shout out from all of us here at the Hair Radio Show family.
Thank
we love her
so much, and of course, I was going to give you a shout out. I thank you for always welcoming me with open arms. Yes, this is my family. I absolutely love the Hair Radio Show.
Thank you.
And look forward to doing more with you, Carrie. I love what you're doing.
Thank you. We're going to have you at the 8-day show next year.
I'm sorry?
The big 8-day Hair Nation Expo.
Yes,
we are coming to get you for that.
Yes. You have to tell the audience definitely about that. I'm really excited about being a part of that. Yeah, definitely.
So this is going to be great. So that is awesome. Yes please. And we're talking about the big Hair Nation Expo. You guys know in 2021, it's the world's first 8-day hair extravaganza, the very first ever. There's never been one that's 8 days. We're looking at the Guinness Book of World Records here. We're talking about huge. So really nice stuff. All right.
Yes, well, I'm excited. Get excited.
We are. Well, listen, this is going to be some good things. So I want to thank you so much, as always. Just a quick check in with the one and only Dr. Pranique James. It gets no better than that. So I want to thank you. And Dr. Pranique James, I have to say you have also helped to inspire us here on the Hair Radio Show. We have our own weekly trichologist, Mr. Kate, out in Kansas. And I'd like to say that all of that whole setup and the whole thing, it was inspired by the work of the extraordinary Dr. Pranik James. So thank you.
Oh,
I really appreciate
that. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So we
yes.
will see you back here very, very soon for another edition. Okay. And we just wish
yes.
you all the best. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, folks, you got it. Keep it right here. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Stay with us.